Hi, I'm Claire Dennington. This is the Service Design Show, episode 177.
Hi, my name is Mark Fontaine, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Service Design Show. On this show, we explore what's beneath the surface of service design. What are the hidden and invisible things that make the difference between success and failure? All to help you design great services that have a positive impact on people, business, and our planet. Our guest in this episode is Claire Dennington. Claire has obtained a PhD from the Oslo School of Architecture and Design in 2021 on a thesis titled Refashioning Service Design, Designing for Popular Culture Service Experience. Now, the reason I'm excited to have Claire on the show with us today is this. There are many famous products out there which have significantly influenced our culture. Here are a few examples that come to mind. The iPhone, Tesla, the Nike Air Jordans, and what about the Volkswagen Beetle, the Game Boy, and the Havaiana flip-flops? All of these products have gone on to become legendary category-defining icons. And these products don't just have regular customers. Oh no. They have fans and ambassadors. What makes them special is that they somehow have been able to create and deliver meaning and value for their customers beyond just their functional aspect. These products help people to express their identity and values in some form. Which of these products speaks to you? Says something about who you are and what you stand for. So we see this phenomenon a lot around products, where products shape pop culture and pop culture inspires a whole new range of products. But somehow we rarely discuss how to leverage pop culture in our service design process. And that feels like a missed opportunity when you look at the power it has to create meaning and value for our customers. Well, that's where Claire comes in. Through her PhD, Claire has looked into how you can use trends in pop culture as a design material for services. Maybe I'm biased, but I find this an extremely inspiring topic. One that opens up a whole new world of opportunities. So at the end of this episode, you'll know what we actually mean by pop culture and its relationship to trends. Why the recent service-oriented brands like Netflix, Uber, and Airbnb are becoming our new pop culture icons. And of course, how you can use this powerful design material to create meaningful services. Whether you're working with a local fitness gym or a large financial institution. If you want to explore topics that help you to grow as a service design professional and like to do it more often with other fellow in-house service designers, then I invite you to have a look at our Circle community. If you haven't yet heard about the Circle, let me quickly fill you in. Maybe the best way to describe the Circle is as the service design dream team you wish you had around you each and every day. Let me explain. The Circle started about 2 years ago as the place where in-house service design professionals could connect, share experiences, and learn from each other. Inside the Circle community, we host multiple events each month to discuss the nitty-gritty stuff of what it means to do service design inside an organization. Because being on the inside is very different than when you're part of an agency. There's undeniably a unique set of challenges. So our Circle members get together to share their wins and failures, to talk about the messy side of their work. In our recent sessions, we explore topics like, what are the biggest trends that will shape our field in the coming years? Which opportunities does trauma-informed service design bring? And where you can add most value as a service designer in the customer experience lifecycle. And every month we add at least 3 new topics to this list. So if you're an in-house service design professional and want to have a service design dream team within arm's reach that helps you to win the battle against organizational inertia in order to create lasting impact, you'll feel right at home in the Circle community. Head over to servicedesignshow.com/circle and learn how you can apply to become a member. So that's servicedesignshow.com/circle. And you'll also find the link in the show notes of the episode. That about wraps it up for the introduction. Now it's time to sit back, relax, and enjoy the inspiring conversation with Claire Dennington. Let the show begin. Welcome to the show, Claire.
Thank you, Mark.
Nice to have you on. We're going to discuss a topic that hasn't been discussed in the previous 176 episodes. So I'm really excited about this. But before we jump in, I would love to know a bit more about you and your context, what you do. So could you give us a 30-second pitch? Who is Claire?
Okay, well, I'm a service designer and a PhD, and I'm based in Oslo. I recently joined Schibsted Nordic Marketplaces, where I'm working as a UX manager. And I guess before that, I've been working a lot with design-driven innovation and circular service design within the fashion and lifestyle industry.
Cool. Now, five questions. I have a lightning round that I haven't prepared you for. The first thing that comes to your mind to get to know you as a person next to the professional. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, Claire. What's always in your fridge?
Oh, always in my fridge, oat milk.
Oat milk. All right. Staying in the food category, what is the best meal you've ever had?
Good question. I've had so many good meals, but I think definitely eating dim sum in Chinatown in London would be one of the best meals.
All right. Which book are you reading right now, if any?
Yes, I'm reading, I've just recently finished actually a Norwegian novel by a Norwegian author called I Am the Wolf, Jeg Ulven, which has been very interesting, discussing growing up in Norway as a second generation immigrant and the family, sort of how the family has experienced.
Next question is, if you could work from anywhere in the world, which place would you pick?
I would probably pick somewhere that has a beach and a nice ocean to swim in. No specific place, but yes, somewhere that you could hang around on the beach as well.
Hanging around on the beach sounds like a great plan. And the fifth and final question is also a tradition here on the show. Do you remember the first time you got in touch with service design?
Yes, I did actually, because I was studying industrial design at the Oslo School of Architecture and Design. So it probably was 2005 or something. And we had a course with Simon Clatworthy, who sort of introduced, I would say, a lot of service design to the Norwegian community. And I just thought it was so interesting and like a great, great introduction to service design at that time.
It's interesting that most people do remember the first moment they learned about service design. I do as well. So cool. Thank you for this introduction into who Claire is and where she would like to spend her days.
Yeah.
Claire, we're going to talk about, you phrased it as trends as design material, or at least that's one of the ways you phrased it. And I liked it a lot because I think I got referenced to you by one of the previous guests, Pat Matthews,
who you
also know. And he, the topic in that episode was rituals as a design material. So I thought, that looks pretty interesting. Now, this is completely new to me. So you have done a PhD related to this topic, to trends, to pop culture, maybe... Can you give us some context? Like, how did this all start for you?
Yes, I think it started with a personal interest. I've always been interested, I guess, in pop cultural expressions and how this, you know, influences us. I've been both working and interested in the sort of lifestyle sector and lifestyle industry, where pop culture is a huge part of it. And then I've been in, I guess, coming from working in different sectors, like the fashion industry, for example, where you would use trends as a material to kind of design your products. And I saw that maybe that was something that had potential also in service design.
Now, I'm an old man. I'm starting to get really old. Pop culture. Mm-hmm. I have some assumptions and ideas about what that might be, but how do you define pop culture? What is it? What is it to you?
I would say it's sort of the way of how we kind of do things in a contemporary view. It's sort of this entanglement of meaning and materiality and social practices of our everyday lives. Of course, like you could say popular culture is also could be quite tied to entertainment or sort of, you know, a lot of people think about American popular culture, and I think it doesn't necessarily have to be that, but it's more about how we sort of do things, what we value, what are our norms of current times.
When you close your eyes and think about pop culture, what is it that you see? Like, what are some images that come to your mind?
I would say definitely today, brands, lots of established, I would say, pop cultural lifestyle brands would come to mind. I would see sort of, good question. More sort of, you could say, aesthetic images, sort of like something conveying some kind of feeling.
Like what? What is part of pop culture for you right now? And stereotypical example.
One thing is probably like definitely how we consume media these days. We are sort of, you know, getting used to shorter and shorter information chunks, or a mix of sort of images and short texts, which has become quite a part of how, at least the younger generation is consuming media, or the way we watch a series and talk about series, you know, that's something we all discuss around the lunch table. What's happening, that's part of popular culture. You always want, but of course you have like other expressions, like it could be music or it could be movies.
I'm starting to get an image, and the thing I'm still curious about is culture versus pop culture, just to help me understand, like, is there a difference, and if so, what is the difference?
That's a huge question. I think basically maybe popular culture is more localized in some ways. So you can have sort of very small units where that shared practices or shared values create this sort of culture, which, you know, you'd start moving into subcultures, but there's all these different layers of popular culture. So maybe popular culture would be defined as something that, you know, most people can relate to, or something that is in people's minds at the moment.
That makes sense. Before we dig into how this applies to services, how are we seeing pop culture being used in other industries? So maybe like, that's you mentioned fashion, but I can imagine also products.
Yes.
How are we seeing it there?
I think definitely, as you said, in product design, it's really a way of how designers, I would say, are interpreting the kind of meaning, I would say, behind these trends or within popular culture, and kind of translating this into the products, meaning that as users, we would choose products because they have some kind of significant meaning for us. And I think a lot about, you know, practically, if you look to fashion or you look to product design, a way of sort of encapturing this is to, you know, identify different popular culture expressions and sort of use this as a material. Then you would use it as inspiration, or you would use it to trigger some kind of concept, or something that resonates, I would say, with users and their current sort of values and aspirations.
When you think about maybe icons from other industries, like around products and fashion, and I don't know, other examples, what are some of the first examples that come to mind? Or when people document or write or create videos about pop culture and products, like what are the examples that they always pick out?
If we stay in sort of, I would say, product and lifestyle, definitely, Apple products would be pulled forwards as very sort of significantly different, perhaps, than computers and sort of that kind of technology sector was looking before Apple came and introduced a completely sort of new way of designing products. And think in the fashion industry, you have brands like Adidas that have had a huge impact with, you know, certain shoe models like three stripes or something that has been taken up into popular culture. We have bands like singing about it, referencing it. So this sort of like continuous interplay, you could say, between popular culture and products. So yeah, I think those can be two examples.
Okay. Now, I was thinking about this topic and trends as a design material or culture as a design material. Mm. And I was thinking, like, aren't we always maybe subconsciously or intentionally designing with culture in mind? Like, our solutions, of course, need to align with the needs and desires of our users.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't align with the culture, they won't work either. So, are we doing this already? And if so, if we aren't, like, what's missing? Where did you mm-hmm. see the opportunity?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good question, because it comes down to perhaps what you're saying, if it's intentionally or unintentionally. It's like some designers would intuitively kind of design, as you said, with pop culture as a part of their repertoire, or, you know, but I think also some parts of service design is, of course, if you're designing for example, redesigning and making services better, and using a lot of course, really importantly, user insights to improve service experiences. But I think with what popular culture sort of did, being aware of how you can use this also to design for future needs, right? So when we talk about trends, or we talk about being able to identify patterns, perhaps you could also try to design new service offerings that are answering to future needs. So it might not be that these are things that users know at the moment they need, but it's more about anticipating what might become valuable or what might be important for users in the near future. And that's sort of tied into that notion of innovation, like trends as an innovation material. So we can,
I get that, because when you look at trends, you're almost forecasting or sort of projecting a direction where groups are going, desires are going, habits, needs. Designing for future makes sense. I was another question I had. Mm. I had a lot of questions about this topic. So how could we recognize a service or a product that isn't designed with pop culture in mind? So let me explain this question a bit more. Yeah. Often it's really hard to pinpoint specific aspects of something that is designed, a product or a service, like, okay, that one is designed with the user needs in mind, because, like, da da da. It's more often it's way easier to say, okay, this service hasn't been designed with the user in mind because, I don't know, waiting
Absolutely.
Times, like the ergonomics of the service or product don't work.
Mm.
So the question again is, how do we recognize services or products that haven't been designed with pop culture in mind, with trends in mind?
I would say perhaps for products, if we start there, you would have a lot of products that are based on sort of functional needs. So it solves a functional something you need to do, right? So you would have, I'll use an example from earlier, which is kitchen products, right? So you would have kitchen products and it would do the job. And then you kind of had this break in product design where the introduction of what is termed meaning innovation. So you're not perhaps innovating on the function that the product has, but it's more of like the meaning this product has for you. And I don't know if you remember like the Italian kitchenware brand Alessi. They did this whole range of, you know, fun kitchen products with bright colors, and they had like humorous aspects to them. And of course, like Philip Stark's orange presser, which is like more like a sculpture, and people would buy it to kind of display it, you know, in your living room, and still has a function, but it's also something that you kind of, it's, you know, you could say desirable, but something that you want also because it resonates with you and your sort of emotional needs, I would say. So I've tried to transfer that also notion into service design, and we have lots of services that might be very functional. They work, and you would be happy when you use them because you get the job done. The offering, core offering, is to help you solve a functional problem. But then you can also sort of, especially in some industry sectors, and you know, add a layer of this sort of popular culture, so that touch points, so that tone of voice, so now all these service details are aligned to the popular cultural sort of understanding.
And I'm thinking, like, what's the value? Why should you do this? And I have an answer, but I'm also curious to your perspective.
Yeah.
So from a business standpoint, if you are able to sort of distinguishing yourself based on function becomes really hard, and you don't want to compete on price. So you need other layers to distinguish your offerings, whether that's a product, whether that's a service. And using trends or using pop culture is you're tying into identity.
Yep.
And people buy products or services from you because they are able to express their identity through your offering.
Yep.
Next to obviously doing the functional thing that it needs to do. But they're buying into much more, how does this make me feel? How does this express who I am?
Yep.
And that's, of course, like opens a huge amount of ways for businesses to distinguish themselves. I don't know. How does that sound?
Absolutely. I think you're very spot on. I think that's one really interesting part of this is, especially again, sort of if you talk about lifestyle or fashion, it's so interconnected with what you said, like identity creation and this notion of, you know, cultural capital. So as users, we might choose different products because they signify something about us, but that could also be transferred to, you know, services design. So why would we choose one service over the other, as you said? And it's more about, those emotional aspects. And I think sort of for me, at least, why this has been really important and something I've looked into is because I think that in looking into, for example, promoting more sustainable and circular consumption practices, so that could be like instead of just buying products, we could reuse them, we could repair them, we could sort of extend the life cycle of products. We need to offer sort of service experiences that inspire us and that motivate us to choose this instead of choosing commercial, you know, new products. So I think it has a lot of value in exploring this and also trying to nudge people towards changing practices, especially when it comes to consumption or how we use, you know, could be how we travel, could be in terms of micro mobility, so all of this like car sharing and these things. If we want people to start changing practices, then we have to, you know, offer service experiences that feel valuable to us.
Yeah, and more in line with who we are or who we want to be. And
exactly.
Yeah, the pull factor of a service that you recognize yourself in is going to be much more than a service that is sort of neutral, but cheaper. Now, a thing that could worry people here is trends are often associated also with things like fashion, where like it's the opposite of being sustainable. How do you see this? So if we're designing with trends, is like, are we throwing sustainability overboard because next year there will be a different trend?
If it was in products, of course, like you are really contributing to that. I think that in services, it's a bit opposite. It would allow us to sort of design for new services, you know, new ways of doing things. So especially in sort of product design, I think I've been working with several product companies, like established brands, and they still, a lot of them still struggling with having this product mindset, whereas like trying to enable this movement to sort of more experience-centric mindset, where they actually can see the value a product has when you can, say, use it again, or it comes back into the loop and it actually would result in users, for example, if we're talking about economics, paying for it twice. Like if you have a product and you can bring it back into the loop and you can repair it, or you can use the materials to make it into something else, or sort of understanding sort of the product's life cycle beyond the point of purchase, right? Because there's like this after phase, what happens with the product after, and if brands or if, you know, businesses are able to make services that can help products being used again, for example, it could rather contribute, I think.
We'll explore this a bit deeper in a second. When we say trends are a design material, could be seen as a design material, just like rituals, for example. Have you thought about the material properties of trends? So if we have, I don't know, wood, it can be strong, it can be light, it can be, can have different colors. Those are the design material properties. Have you identified material properties of trends? And if so, what are they?
I haven't actually like specifically done that. So that's really interesting. I think just thinking of it now would be that trends are actually dynamic. So that's quite unique. But I mean, it's something that would shift and change, like you said this now. And if we're thinking about services, it could be that the main service offering, so you would say like the product is the same, but the material or the trends or this sort of the way of how we deliver them or how they look and feel, for example, that could change. So one thing is that it's dynamic. And I think also it's, if we could talk more about sort of it's the emotional aspect, I suppose. It's more like an emotional material and meaningful. And it's definitely, you know, intangible versus the more tangible material qualities that you would have in product design. So it's not as easily definable. But I think that would perhaps be some of the qualities.
Very interesting exercise to think about. Because if you understand the material properties of the design material, then you know what the things are that you can shape and influence and work on. Thinking about shaping and influencing, I think one of the saying is often that products or products influence culture and culture influences products. So where does it start? How do you see this? We put the iPod into the world and then it shapes culture. Right? Yeah. It's an iconic thing.
Yeah.
Or was the iPod influenced by existing culture? And how do you see this interplay?
I think it's hard to perhaps define where it starts because it's such a sort of cyclical dynamic entanglement, and it continuously kind of bounces off each other and influences in both directions. So we see that it starts somewhere, but I think perhaps like one start would be the ability to kind of identify and articulate sort of what is happening, what are the patterns we are seeing, and what will this mean? How can we use that to, for example, innovate or design new services? So I think, no, it's hard to say, because you could see that often it would be, for example, some people, the early adopters or like innovators, you know, would start doing something differently, and then that would spread a bit, and then you would see sort of perhaps brands or anybody picking up on this and trying to make it more popular. So it's sort of like this trickle effect as well, when, like we were talking about this now, from subcultures to popular culture, like so it's this sort of dynamic interplay all the time, I think.
And when you mentioned subculture, I was thinking, like, so what examples could I come up with that would maybe be a good example here? And Airbnb would probably be an example of pop culture, how we travel, how we explore the world. But it started in a subculture. It started with couch surfing, where people, like, that was, you travel and you sort of hack the system by not going to a hotel, but actually finding a place to sleep on a couch somewhere. And then Airbnb very well capitalized on that and just made it bigger. So would you also consider that to be an example of a service that now is part of pop culture?
Absolutely. I think that's a really good example. And we could go, further back to the practice of just like visiting friends, right? That's the feeling that Airbnb wanted to create, was that you became a local, and they started with doing all these small touch points which enhance that sort of meaningful experience, at least what I heard. So they would make sure the host stocked up the fridge with the local delicacies, and they would give you all the right tips to what you could do. I don't know if this is true, but I read some of that because I think when it started in San Francisco, some of the first hosts there were they added spare change, coins, so that the people could give this to homeless people in San Francisco to really get the experience. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it was just every sort of small detail was thought through to enhance and make this sort of a meaningful experience. So I think that's a really good example.
Other example, really quickly, we get into the well-known brands and Netflix, Uber, probably how we move around, how we get our food, Netflix around consumption, media consumption, TikTok around consumption. So those are maybe the more, I'm thinking that these are the newer types of service offerings.
Mm-hmm.
All of these three weren't here probably 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But are we seeing also examples of more traditional services, I don't know, in banking or?
Yes, absolutely. I think there are a lot more banking options now. I think there's done a lot on, of course, the user experience that makes it easier for people to understand banking. I know of, I think it's a British banking service that was designed specifically for entrepreneurs, creative entrepreneurs, to make it really understandable, how taxes and everything works. And it was really interactive, and it was really visually appealing. So I think there's things happening also in the traditional service sectors, not everywhere, but at least some places.
When things move from subcultures to pop culture, is there a next stage? Do things become mainstream and then sort of die out of being in the pop culture stage? How does that work?
Mm-hmm. I think in products, definitely. If the provider isn't good at keeping up to date and sort of changing in line with the change we see. And I think, if we go back to Airbnb, it's changed dramatically since it first started to now, where they're offering experiences. They have these packages. During COVID, they went over to delivering online experiences, right? You can do virtual cooking classes. So it's still the same offering. So you're offering a local hosting experience, but they can continuously manage to pull this into sort of new directions, seeing what's happening, which new trends, and sort of implementing this. So I think again, like if you see trends as some sort of dynamic material, you'll always be trying moving forward, although your core offering and your core values might be the same.
And maybe we come back to the question where, is this something that you want to be associated with? And something that you want to be associated with today will probably evolve next year, in 5 years, in 10 years. I'm just thinking about the cars we drive.
Yes.
Like, that has changed. Like, maybe in the past you wanted a big SUV. I don't know, because that signals something to the outside world. These days, the same people might want to be associated with a Tesla for the fact that they are. Probably that they are able to drive really fast, but they tell everybody that it's about the environment, but it's dynamic. And what is the thing that you want to be associated with? And
No, absolutely. I think that will shift, it will be different. And I think Tesla is a really good example as well. If we go back to sort of this innovating through meaning and like how Tesla managed to shift like the meaning of electric cars from something that was sort of, not that cool, but very sort of sustainable. And then they just made this completely new experience where Teslas were associated with, as you said, speed, status. So many, at least Norway, Teslas are super popular. And a lot of people didn't buy them because they were sustainable, right? It's like the identity creating part again. So, but of course that will change over time. I think it's interesting if we manage to use that in services so that you can associate with, for example, more sustainable consumption practices, like by using this service, I choose to use secondhand clothing, I choose to use micromobility or green mobility. And then perhaps there are ways of sort of showing that or expressing that.
Or just like Tesla did, it's almost a Trojan horse. Like you're doing things that are better for our environment, but you're buying them for other reasons. Because I don't know, with food, I can imagine that it would just be a preference of taste. It tastes better and it's better for the environment. Like, right, that's coming back to this question is, let's say somebody got super inspired by our conversation so far and they're a service design professional working inside a large organization, never have thought about using trends as a design material. What would be your tip? What would be your tip to start? Like, how do you embed this in your day-to-day design practice?
Well, I think, first of all, sort of familiarize with the trends. Some organizations would have trend units, so you could go to them and sort of get five big trends to watch out for, and then you start doing research, I think is important, meaning, of course, desktop research. There's a lot of trend resources, but also getting out and looking around and, understanding what's happening, you can often start to see these patterns, right? So you can see like what's popular on, for example, Netflix, like what is this series actually about? And then you can start seeing, all people are wearing this, what does that actually mean? And then it becomes all these sort of small points that you could practice connecting in some way. And I think it's a lot about using your intuition as well to sort of be able to identify. So I think that's sort of one start of it, is identifying it. And you can use sort of visual material. You can, mood boarding, for example, which use a lot in product design, it can be used into service like to convey the experience that you're trying to design for in a way. And articulating it, I think like breaking it down to actually being able to say, what does this trend mean? Like, is it about safety? Is it about convenience? And what does that kind of look and feel like? I think that's one thing. And then start sort of using this into the service journey. So like into the touch points, what would be a touch point that kind of resonates with popular culture now? What is the tone of voice that is sort of dominating this industry sector, or what would I like to, how would I like this service to be conceived? And so I think sort of trying to find also these design tools that are visual, that are helping you to break down, you know, this meaning behind. And I also worked with developing sort of like a tool called the experience-centric service journey. So like one thing is mapping out a service journey, all the points, but then also adding a layer of sort of visual mapping. So it's like a mix between a mood board and a service journey. So it also helps create sort of this common understanding when you discuss with other team or people in the organization, like what this experience is going to be like.
From your experience, have you seen that it's better to focus on a single trend like sustainability, or should we like just take five trends and try to infuse our service with all these five trends?
That's a good question. I think for existing brands that kind of have a strong brand presence and brand values, it's about being able to choose the trends that fit with sort of like a brand match, you could say. But I think also it's, you could have some really large scale trends that are obvious, and then you can have like smaller trends that are interesting. And I think as a service designer, you have to be the one that sort of chooses and mixes a bit between this to create your own interpretation of it, if you could say so. And I think again, like you said, like these large scale trends like sustainability becomes, yeah, like a mainstream, it becomes something that's obvious, like every new service now should be in some way promote sustainable, you know, some kind of sustainability. But then you might look at the smaller trends, and so how can we sort of infuse these to make it even like a sustainable service, but that actually resonates with me, you know, or different users.
That identity part, the part about resonating with who I am is, I think, super important. Because, yeah, again, thinking, for instance, about clothes, like, there are a million, I don't know, sweaters, t-shirts, or that I can buy. And why did I go for, I don't know, this bamboo shirt, right?
Exactly.
That's trying to express probably who I am in one way or the other. And you briefly mentioned something about brands, and that made me think, like, what is the interplay between these two things? Because probably the marketing department here will say, people choose our products and our services because of our brand, rather than because they are linked to trends. So what is the relationship between brands, branding, and the stuff that we just talked about?
I think, you know, for some brands, there's a very direct connection, coming back to what you said this now, is that about, you know, the products that these brands design are part of creating popular culture as well. So for some brands, I think there's really strong alignment. And I think that even though you have a strong kind of brand, you know, you have a strong brand, you could still tweak this the experience or your new services to trends and new trends. But I think it's probably perhaps also as interesting for brands that perhaps, you know, new brands, like new services that are trying to make it on the market, like how can they offer experiences that are competing with these large brands in some way, especially when it comes to for example, in fashion, we see services for, you know, reusing things or repairing things. They have to like really be good at offering great experiences so that they also can compete with the established brands that are sort of so interconnected with popular culture.
Personal question is, what are some of the trends that you are excited about right now?
Yes, there are quite a few. I'll just pull forward one, I think, which is important. And I think there are lots of trends that are start as trends, and as I said, they become sort of more like part of our everyday lives. But recently, there's, at least in service innovation and technology, there's been a huge focus on women's health, like women's health and women's well-being, which I find really interesting. See new services popping up like Ula, Wildflower, Vira, like that are sort of catering women's needs in different phases of our lives. So women's health is like, you know, we have all these different stages we go through. We have pregnancy, you have menopause, and there's a lot more focus on this now. And there's a lot more, sort of tailored services that offer these holistic experiences that really kind of understand these different needs. So it's not about, you know, health as one big thing. It's about understanding how these can shift in line with different phases of your life. And I think, so another really interesting thing is sort of the potential that lies in this, if we start looking at that. So one thing is you have different services, but you could also start to think of, I saw this Norwegian training, like workout studio, and it was just an advertisement, but they're talking about how fit women could work out differently during like a cycle. So, you know, you can start thinking about, so how could we use this to offer like different type of subscriptions? How can we use this to offer different type of classes? So there's lots of, I think there's lots of exciting and interesting potential there that hasn't been fully explored.
And this is, I think, a great and practical example. Like if you, staying in the surface realm, if you are a fitness studio, it's just as easy for you to look at trends and connect to that. You don't have to be, I don't know, an Uber, an Airbnb, like you don't have to be a huge brand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can find something that's sort of relevant to your core offering, and then how can we expand on that? Like, how can we see all our different parts of our service and infuse these, if you could say so, with some kind of popular culture? And it could be small things like just tiny interactions, or it could be larger things like events or, you know, physical touch points.
One last example that came to my mind was, there are a lot of holiday options these days that sort of help you to reconnect with nature.
Yes.
Like in the Netherlands, we have vacations that you can actually stay at a farm and be amongst the cattle and, and with the farmer and sort of get your fresh eggs straight out of the chicken almost. Yeah. So that connects to, I guess, a trend where people want to reconnect with nature. So
definitely
million of options. Yeah.
Definitely.
What would be, you already mentioned something about how to start. Is there you mentioned something about a tool that you developed. Any other tips for getting people up to speed and bringing this into their, again, into their practice?
It could be, you know, just starting conversations about it. It could be just acknowledging the sort of emotional, meaningful aspect of your service. It could be sort of looking beyond the functional, what meaning, what value are we bringing to your users? And discussion is always good. I think one thing that I worked a bit with was also like concept, like service concept development, like just starting to find trends and just do quick sort of concept sketches on what could this look like, because I saw that at least in larger organizations, these were great sort of tools for prompting conversations, right? Because you can start seeing something, you start discussing it. And it's a bit like in the car industry, right? You would have concept cars and you would have like these huge shows where car brands would just like show newest technology, future cars that would never be produced. But it's a way of showing that this is where we're going and this is what's possible, you know, with technology or with materials or with whatever. I find that really interesting also in service design, like how could you use these sort of concept services as a way of starting to discuss more strategic decisions.
I love this example. I don't know if it moves into design fiction, because I don't know too much about design fiction, but I absolutely can see an exercise where you would, if we stick with the fitness studio, think about the trend of women's health. Mm-hmm. How would a fitness studio look there? But also reconnecting with nature. How would a fitness studio look that does that?
Exactly.
And then you can pick 8 other trends and sort of...
Yeah, exactly.
Just to open the opportunity space and the solution space and think about what if right?
Yes,
that's,
yes,
I guess,
that's
the
great
exercise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great exercise. I think that's super. And then what if, and then sort of being able to define sort of how that would influence all these parts of the service. So yeah, I think that's a great exercise.
That's a great exercise. Mm. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
If somebody made it all the way to this moment in our conversation, what is the one thing you hope that they will remember and walk away with?
I think I hope people sort of understand that popular culture can offer you sort of a source of, call it inspiration, for example, as a designer, and that by implementing or using popular culture influence, you can you can sort of design for experiences that hopefully people find valuable and connect with, and in this sort of, also that we haven't talked much about this, but as a service designer, you know, you are translating cultural meaning, you are kind of a mediator, and you are part of shaping culture. So I think it's important for people in practice, or to at least reflect upon.
I thank you for bringing this in, and I love it, because I think still in the service design space, we don't really have a good vocabulary about the design materials that we're working with.
Mm.
Time, relationships, people.
Yeah.
But also adding trends and rituals to our palette.
Mm.
It becomes, I don't know, it becomes easier. You sort of see what the things are that you can influence. So
great.
Thank you. Thank you, Claire. Thanks for coming on and sharing this with us. And I hope a lot of people will get inspired and start using trends, and we'll be able to see more pop culture embedded inside the services that we use.
Yes. Thank you so much, Mark. Great conversation.
What is the trend that you'd like to incorporate in your design process? If you're listening to this episode on Spotify, there's a feature that allows you to leave a comment, and we'd love to hear from you. I want to give a huge shout out to Claire for coming on the show and sharing her learnings with us. By getting a better grasp on the materials that make up our services, we can take our craft to the next level. I want to remind you that if you're an in-house service design professional who wants to sharpen their saw, the Circle will be a community where you'll feel right at home. Inside the Circle, you'll meet other passionate service designers from companies across the globe to learn from their wins and failures. Not once, but each and every month. That's how you stay in shape and keep on top of your professional game. There is an application process to join this community, so if you'd like to know if you qualify, head over to servicedesignshow.com/circle for all the details. And you'll also find the link in the show notes of this episode. My name is Mark Fontijn, and I want to thank you for spending a part of your day with me. It's an absolute honor and pleasure. Keep making a positive impact, and I'll catch you very soon in a brand new episode of The Service Design Show. See you then.